God's Forever Family, The Jesus People Movement in America. Larry Eskridge, Oxford University Press, 2013, 400 pages. A summary review by Michael Plato. Though born in the 1970s, I never really knew the decade, my personal comprehension being no more than a few vague visual impressions and emotions. One of these early memories is of the Jesus Freak. Probably it came from television, intermingling as it does with the images of Jimmy Carter and Sesame Street. Since that era, occasional mention has been made of the Jesus Freak, typically as a side note in popular culture retrospectives. It is a figure not so much to be studied or explained, but merely to be looked at, as one might a sideshow at a carnival. It sends out mixed or confused signals. On the one hand, it represents the free-willed, narcotic-experimenting, countercultural, back-to-nature ethos of the hippie movement. On the other hand, it embodies the values and beliefs of the straight-laced, church-attending, Bible-thumping conservative Christians. How did such a strange hybrid come about? Where did it go? For the first time, we may have something of an answer. God's Forever Family, The Jesus People Movement in America, is the first major monograph to document this curious historical phenomenon. Not only is it a work which provides startling comprehensiveness, primarily through biography and ethnographic research, but it calculates this ephemeral movement's lasting impact on the wider world of the church in America and the world. Its author, Larry Eskridge, is on staff at the Institute for the Study of American Evangelicals at Wheaton College. This study represents years of research Eskridge did outside his mandated work at Wheaton, and includes not only heavy archival work, but also the surveying of over 800 participants in the movement. Much of this later work is conveniently laid out in a clear and convenient appendix. That this movement peaked over 40 years ago, 1969 to 1972, was largely ad hoc and left very little in terms of institutional record, had to have been a significant challenge, and is a testament to the author's diligence and the advantages of web-based research methods. While Eskridge was confined to conducting much of his research on the periphery, his conclusion as to the movement's impact is much more central, arguing from the beginning that the Jesus People movement is one of the most significant American religious phenomena of the post-war period. And though it may be tempting to dismiss or look down on the religious enthusiasms of youth culture as little more than the religious equivalent of the hula hoop or bell-bottom pants, he seeks to demonstrate that without the Jesus People, it is impossible to explain the resurgence of evangelicalism during the late 20th and early 21st centuries. To this reviewer's mind, he makes his case convincingly. Much of the book takes up the task of mapping out the geographical spread of the movement. The story begins in the Bay Area, where much of the counterculture was to have its beginning and home, when a couple of acid-tripping hippies started attending a church pastored by a conservative Baptist. As the Baptist pastor and his congregation were pretty straight-laced, and the hippies typically showed up on Sunday mornings stoned and prone to shouting out during the preaching, it was not a comfortable first encounter. Soon, however, the pastor and the hippies began to warm to one another, and the movement was born. Its initial goal was to reach out to the young people who were flooding into San Francisco, many of whom had been raised in Christian homes, but had left their faith, which they had found to be out of touch with their reality. The Jesus People movement sought new ways to engage these youth with the gospel, largely through adapting to the culture they already inhabited. From here, Eskridge traces the movement as it spread through Southern California, up the West Coast, into the heartland, and throughout the rest of the nation. He notes the point at which it gained national media attention, the travails it faced, such as its exploitation by cult movements like the Children of God, and its abrupt and seeming departure from the scene by the mid-70s. Along the way, Eskridge lays out some of the movement's most striking characteristics. These characteristics, he later notes, would be key in terms of assuring that it would have a lasting impact in terms of revitalizing evangelicalism in the following decades. From the movement's straight sponsors at the Bay Area Baptist Church, the Jesus People picked up a strong adherence to key components of David Bevington's quadrilateral definition of the historical evangelical, namely biblicism, crucicentrism, conversionism, and activism. This aspect of their belief seems to have been both definitive and apparent. The street Christians were certainly bibliocentric and strongly fundamentalist in their interpretation of the Bible, placed a heavy emphasis on conversion and the atoning, substitutionary role of Christ's death on the cross, and were decidedly gung-ho in their activist inclinations to help, evangelize, and disciple their peers. Certainly, no contemporary observers of the American religious scene were confused about where the Jesus people fit in the spectrum of American Christianity. Yet the Jesus people were also picking up strains of Pentecostalism as well, which meant that many within the movement were engaged in glossolalia, prophecy, and divine healing. Direct supernatural intervention was also expected, and this led to numerous claims of miraculous events. As many of the Jesus people were young, unemployed, and living communally, often these alleged miracles involved the appearance or multiplication of food. A final feature of the Jesus people, and one which might be the most unexpected, was its fervent apocalyptic orientation, which took the form of dispensational premillennialism. With dispensationalism's strong associations with isolationist and rural fundamentalism, one would think this would be the last thing to be embraced by the culture-loving Jesus people. Yet, Eskridge identifies two reasons for this predilection. First, the movement possessed a strong pessimism about where the overall culture was going. This was derived primarily from the counterculture's anti-establishment leanings, given birth in the Vietnam War protests, and was reinforced by their new Christian perceptions. The second reason for the movement's embrace of dispensationalism was much more ominous. Another reason for the Jesus people's enthusiastic embrace of dispensational teachings was the countercultural penchant for esoteric philosophical, occult, and religious literature. In some ways, the hippie Christians merely shifted cultural gears. Before, many of them pored over the I Ching, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, the Urantia Book, and the works of Carlos Castaneda for clues to meaning and spiritual enlightenment. Now they could indulge their mystical bent by studying the symbolism and hidden prophetic clues in the writings of the Old Testament prophets and John the Revelator. While these above features were at least strongly evangelical in origin, there were other innovations which came directly from the countercultural movement, and some of these would in turn eventually cross over from the Jesus people into the larger evangelical world itself. One innovation of the movement which seems to have its roots in the counterculture, but which does at least have some precedence biblically, and in American history for that matter, was its communalism. While most Jesus people did not in fact live communally, enough did that it became a popularly identifiable hallmark. The reasons for communalism were understandable, and in some instances, even admirable. First, many saw this as a way of emulating the lives of the apostles and early Christians as described in the book of Acts. Second, many in the movement were coming from the lowest economic stratum of society, often young people coming out of the drug culture. Communal living was a practical and economic necessity. Third, given the characteristics of many of the new converts, order and discipline were needed to prevent a relapse into old ways. Communal living provided an extended opportunity to teach babes in Christ and to see to it that they learn not only basic Christian doctrines and behavior, but also, in many cases, basic life skills. A second characteristic of the Jesus people that was picked up from the counterculture was its informality in terms of dress and behavior. This aspect was carried over into their worship and evangelism, which put them directly in opposition to the Sunday best mentality of most conventional churchgoers at the time. The fact that in many come-as-you-are churches today you can see people in t-shirts and sandals sipping on a hot beverage while listening to the sermon is a direct result of this informalization. A final trait of the Jesus people that was to have a lasting impact was its easy, even eager, embrace of popular culture. Not only did they possess a sense of comfort in appropriating pop culture conventions, they often could do so with an ironic awareness. This comfort was certainly at odds with much of evangelical culture at the time, which preferred to keep mainstream culture at arm's length, but it gave them the tangible means by which to reach the nation's youth. In the process, we begin to see what would eventually emerge as the basis for much of Christian bookshop culture. The Jesus people happily decorated their world with artwork, posters, bumper stickers, and buttons. Artwork, from thrift store paintings of Christ to homemade murals to an ever-increasing retinue of Jesus posters, and Bible verses in day-glow letters frequently covered the walls. Their buildings were not the only things they decorated. The Jesus people festooned themselves in colorful buttons announcing Jesus is Lord, or Have a Nice Forever, as well as religious jewelry, generally anathema to most evangelicals up until this time, ranging from simple wooden crosses on leather straps to, as the movement matured, silver and one-way pendants and pins. Meanwhile, their ever-present Bibles became objects of beautification via hand-tooled leather bindings and leather and fabric Bible covers. Also, given the fact that many of the Jesus people had been raised on movies and television, it was no surprise that many of them saw the move beyond print culture as a legitimate means of expanding Christian ministry. Many of them began utilizing skits and street theater as part of their worship and evangelism. But this would soon lead to the adoption of other kinds of media. Eventually, they would co-opt an aspect of the popular culture which would have, overall, the biggest transformative effect on evangelical Christian worship, namely popular music. With that, we would also witness the emergence of the Jesus Rock movement. Despite this promising mixture of adherences to traditional beliefs and adoption of contemporary forms, the movement was not to last, at least not in the form in which it originally manifested. Like the secular hippies of the Woodstock era, most of its adherents got a haircut and a job, and if they continued in the faith, moved into somewhat more respectable suburban churches. Yet while their memory has been reduced to an ephemeral blip on the American religious landscape, their impact within evangelicalism has only grown increasingly more pronounced, and from this reviewer's perspective, for some good and for a whole lot of ill. In his final chapter, Eskridge charts the impact of the Jesus people over the past four decades. He notes that what had originally started as Jesus Rock eventually morphed into what is now known as the contemporary Christian music, or CCM, industry. While CCM produced popular artists such as Amy Grant, who began her career singing in Jesus People coffee houses, who put out albums which made their way into the homes of Christians across the nation, the Jesus people would also initiate what became known as praise music, and praise music would make its way into the very heart of America's churches. Beyond music, the Jesus people would also initiate a number of other cultural trends. Their embrace of youth culture would eventually bring churches and youth movements closer together, resulting in the Christian hipster of the early 21st century. This cultural embrace would also play a major role in birthing the multi-billion-dollar Christian bookstore industry, as has been previously suggested, as well as an entire Christian entertainment subculture of movies, television shows, and video games. Finally, the movement would lead to the transformation of church itself through the emergence of the new paradigm churches such as Calvary Chapel and The Vineyard, which combined biblical teaching with countercultural trendiness and served it up in religious services which were made palatable to the tastes of middle-brow suburbanites. At the same time, the seeker-sensitive megachurches, such as Willow Creek, also began to emerge as a direct result of the Jesus people sensibility, and these churches were even more accommodating to the culture in an effort to appeal directly to the unchurched. How one judges the Jesus People movement, then, depends on how one perceives these contemporary manifestations. At any event, now we have its history finally laid out before us, and for that, we should be thankful. Michael John Plato is professor of film, cultural studies, and world religion at Seneca College. He is also book review editor for Contemporary Religion and Culture here at Books at a Glance. Copyright 2014, Books at a Glance. Books at a Glance book summaries are available by subscription only, and except for brief quotes, may not be reproduced, in whole or in part, without express written permission.